Hello, everyone, and welcome to the LFC Roundtable Podcast. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and this is the podcast where we talk about everything on the feeds, but we don't have the full LFC crew with us tonight. This is Eclipse Day, and Brent, he took a trip to go view the eclipse in the totality thing, and got stuck in traffic on the way back. So much so that I believe he is currently napping at a rest stop and will be attempting to get his way back home at around midnight. So Brent is not with us. And then Melissa, this has nothing to do with the eclipse, but maybe it's just like bad luck or something. I don't know. She got stuck in court. She's a lawyer. We'll talk about that when she gets on the Taryn show.
Well, maybe the case was people versus eclipse, Taryn. You don't know.
maybe. So with me today, I do have Alex Kidwell. How you doing, Alex?
I'm good. Actually, it just occurred to me. I should have gone back there. I've got like a class ring and I could have used that as a prop and been like, I've got a ring of replacement. Wait, I got two of these jokers. We got two.
Yes. And also with me, my good friend, John Krause. How you doing, John?
Today, Taryn, I saw a sign in the sky. I think it's an omen. I think we're going to have fire and brimstone coming down, rivers and seas boiling, 40 years of friendship, earthquakes, meatball volcanoes, the dead battling back from the grave, human sacrifices, alphas and betas living together, mass hysteria.
So when I told John that I needed him for the podcast, he was like, just make sure you give me like an hour's notice. I now know what he needed to do in that hour was write that intro. Also with me is someone you may not be familiar with. She actually did a podcast with us back in was it Big Brother 17?
18.
Last summer.
Wow, I get confused.
It's all running together, Taryn.
Yes. It's Kirsten. How you doing, Kirsten?
Hi. I had maybe like 4.5 minutes, so I don't have a fun introduction prepared, but I'm here and I'm excited. So
yes.
Yeah, we're going through the Rolodex and all these people have work. And I'm like, Taryn, what about Kirsten? It's 4:57 and it's 5 o'clock show. She can handle it.
Yeah. So go easy on Kirsten. She had about 5 minutes to prepare.
I make no promises.
Yes. All right. So we are live here every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Eclipse or no eclipse, court or no court. And we have the chat room open on robisawebsite.com, and you can send questions into me at Armstrong Taryn on Twitter if you so desire. But let's get into this week. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about here. Tons of stuff because tons of changes have happened. And by changes, I mean minor changes in Paul's final end game plans. So we have Christmas winning HOH. She ultimately nominates Jason and Matt. Put them up on the block to backdoor Mark. Mark tries to plead, don't do this to me, don't backdoor me. It doesn't work. He doesn't win the veto, even though he does get picked for the veto. The backdoor is not, does not work in that way. Jason wins the veto, takes himself on the off the block. Mark is the replacement nominee, and he is all but certainly going to be going home on Thursday night. Is there anything that Mark can do, John, to save himself?
Nope, that was a good summary. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow. The end.
Especially since, yeah, good night indeed. He's napping right now. So, I mean, you know, yeah, we're really off to an auspicious start with this campaign.
Kirsten, we haven't heard from you all season long. How do you feel about Mark? And do you think that there's any chance here?
Honestly, I really don't think there's a chance. Mark is like a big disappointment to me. But ultimately, it's kind of like, you know what, let's get this last tiny move out of the way and see this big group start to cannibalize each other, because at least something different is going to happen next week because it has to.
Yeah, we are starting to see a little bit of that. As I mentioned, some plans are changing. People are talking. It does seem as though it's a foregone conclusion here. Are there any sort of, final remarks we want to make about Mark's game here? Is there anything worth discussing? Are we going to have a funeral for Mark? Or is this just like, all right, let's get to next week already, John?
You know what? I really, really liked Mark a lot. I know that there was some controversy between Mark and Josh. A lot of people took Josh's side. Some people took Mark's side when it came to like throwing hot sauce in so-and-so's face and the whole pool game and double tapping. But I like Mark. He just seems like a nice person. He's cried. I think he might have the crying award this season. He seems like a sensitive soul. I don't know that he has the chops for this game. I think that he kind of got in over his head. And then he fell head over heels for Elena. I don't know if you talked on the morning update about Zingbot. That's something we could talk about. I know that what people were talking about, that Mark and what his zing was. We could talk about that. But other than that, no, it's a nice, it's a good night, Mark. Sweet prince. We'll see you later.
Yeah, well, Alex, where did Mark go wrong here? Can we pinpoint a moment or a move or something where just like this was Mark's mistake, or just he just not great at this game?
I mean, he's not great at this game. I mean, there was a point where he's pretty well positioned where it seemed like, you know, Dominique was, you know, like and he, like he had a little bit of an alliance going within Cody's large alliance. But when Cody fell, Mark wasn't able to do what everyone else did and just separate. He kept kind of drifting back. He lost the trust of everyone else. He never regained Cody's trust either. So at that point, he's left on an island where nobody is wanting to work with him. He kind of, you know, sat on the fence while everybody else picked firm size, and then they see him up there on the fence like, what are you doing up there? And that was it.
Yeah, and I mean, people told him this all season long, but it really did seem as though his emotions really got in the way. And he was very fickle throughout the entire season. He couldn't really pick a side. He kept drifting back and forth. And Elena also had this kind of problem. They both kind of fall in the same way here, but really, you know, nothing was going to help them against Paul here. I mean, Paul was always going to be targeting them, especially after Mark won all of those competitions. And you can't even say that maybe he shouldn't have won those competitions because he was always the backup target. So it was very useful for him to be safe there. But yeah, there's really not a whole lot left to be said about Mark's game. It's been, this demise has been a long time coming. But it does seem as though there have been some changes. In particular, the target has shifted from Matt and Raven to Alex and Jason. This has kind of been a shock ever since the feeds came back from the, when they were down during the double eviction. John, can you tell me, like, what happened here? Why are Alex and Jason in so much hot water all of a sudden?
Well, there have been a lot of conversations going on in the house about how Alex and... So everyone knows who the pairs are, which is interesting because no one's talking about how Paul, as sort of the floating singular person, is the one who benefits the most from this. But everyone knows that Raven and Matt are a pair, Christmas and Josh are a pair, and then Jason and Alex are a pair. And a lot of people have been talking, and Paul has been encouraging this. So I think he's had a change of heart. But people have been talking about how if you cut Alex, Jason is really adrift. A lot of people think that without Alex, that Jason not only has nobody, but also will just be completely clueless. People see Jason having no game and having all of his strategy coming from her. Whereas I think if you cut Raven, a lot of people think, well, Matt could either win a competition or he might have some strategy left in him. You know, if you cut Josh, then Christmas she might be able to hold her own a little bit in strategically. But a lot of people view Jason as such a useless appendage of Alex that if you cut Alex, that Jason's no worries at all. And I think that's sort of why the target is shifting. And again, Paul is encouraging this. So it's definitely what he's thinking.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think part of it has also been their prowess in competitions. Paul certainly is starting to get a little worried. Alex certainly is somebody that is very good at competitions. And with Jason winning so many, including this veto this week, I think he is starting to get worried there, along with perhaps some of that talk of Alex saying, oh, Jason's my ride or die. And the idea that Jason was talking with Mark behind his back about taking him out didn't really come out for another week after that. Kirsten, have you noticed what's really like gone wrong here for Alex and Jason?
Well, I mean, first of all, Alex is a moron. Like to be sitting there in front of everyone and be like, oh yeah, Jason's my ride or die, and think that is going to accomplish anything other than increase the target on their backs is just ridiculous. Jason is seen very much as a puppet. I think what people are failing to see is that if Alex goes and Jason stays, him and Kevin can make a really strong pair going forward. They like Alex always is kind of taking Jason away from making good decisions, and nobody else is really seeing that. But I think Jason and Kevin could be a deadly duo, and it could be a big mistake to get rid of Alex first.
Yeah, and I mean, Paul has been very much sort of pushing this idea that if you take Alex out, Jason and Kevin are going to pair up, and that's not good. However, people are very scared of Alex because she is so good at competitions, and Mark has been pushing that agenda as well. He was trying to do that to save himself. Now I think he's just doing it in the same way that sort of like Cody was doing it, where it's just like, you know what? You know, I might as well just throw anything I've got against the wall. Alex, how do you feel about that? Should Paul be worried about these people targeting Alex instead of Jason?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, the only thing that's kept Jason from considering flipping on Paul has been Alex. Alex is much more loyal to Paul, blindly loyal to Paul on just a ridiculous level. I mean, a level I don't know if we've ever really seen where she just has no interest in even like confirming her position with him. She just knows that she's good all the time. Like she doesn't have to check in. Like, what was that conversation about? It doesn't matter. So yeah, I mean, it really, I think, is a situation where, you know, getting rid of Alex is probably not great for Paul's game. And that's why I think, you know, Paul is going to be more inclined to, you know, turn this around and try to get rid of like a Matt or a Kevin first. Yeah, I think Kevin in particular is someone that Paul is going to be worried about sooner rather than later, because Kevin, even though he, like everyone else, goes to Paul and asks, like, what should I be doing? I mean, there are these moments still where he seems like astute on a level that no one else is. And it's funny to hear them talk about like, Kevin has to know this game. There's no way Kevin doesn't know this game. He's the only one. It's like, no, you're all just that bad. You really are, that a guy with no knowledge of what this is could come in and be this much better than all of you.
I will say, too, about Paul. First of all, in full disclosure, I have completely pivoted. I'm over it. I'm totally Paul. I'm all friendship. At this point, he's the most deserving winner. I'm totally behind Paul. But I will say a little bit of a knock to his prowess as a player is he has had a couple of misfires in terms of his intuition. Earlier this season, we talked a lot about how he wanted to cut Matt and Raven when they were clearly super, super loyal to him. And this idea that he's even entertaining or listening to the idea, or that he's letting his minions talk about cutting Alex, I think is a bit of a misread too, since she's definitely even more loyal to him than Matt and Raven are. I think ultimately it's going to work out for him because of the lack of strategy coming from anybody else. But I do think that's a little sort of a little notch down in terms of his ability overall. He's had a little bit of a mistuition or intuition.
Mistuition.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, I think this is something that concerns Paul a lot. There's been a lot of talk, you know, Matt and Raven in particular, like Alex, she's the biggest threat. After Mark talked with Christmas and Josh, they have been saying, yeah, we need to get Alex out. To the point where even when Christmas was talking with Paul last night, she was saying, look, fine, we'll take out Mark this week, but we definitely need to take out Alex next week. And Paul was just like, well, I mean, sure, but you know that means Jason's going to team up with Kevin. She's like, who cares? Who cares? Paul cares. because he does. He's got this sort of new setup for the final five. His new plan is, all right, here's what we're going to do. It's going to be Christmas, Josh, Kevin, and Raven. And if that's his final five, he feels like he'll be able to win out. And if he's able to win out, he feels like he's able to basically beat any of them in the final two, which means he's won the game. He also feels like if he gets to that final five without having been nominated, the fact that he'll win out means that he will never be nominated, which means he'll have another, again, like a great shot at winning that the final two, being able to say, look, I was never nominated the entire season. So that's his current plans, but there is a slight alteration to that as well. He's considering, and this is why he really wants Alex in the game, to give him more options. He's also considering the idea of, let's maybe replace Kevin in that group with Alex, because what Alex will do for me is, even though she can potentially beat me in competitions, she's also a big target in front of me, and she's blindly loyal, meaning if she does win, she's going to help me get further in the game. There's a lot of back and forth here. I don't think Paul has decided yet, but I do think he wants to keep Alex around just so he has the ability to decide later on. Kirsten, what do you think about all that?
I think it definitely, I can see where it makes sense to keep Alex for Paul's game, just because at the end, if she wins a crucial competition, she's far more likely to keep him safe. Kevin seems to me like the type who would get to the end and would be willing to cut him and show, you know, I've got balls in this game. I'm willing to make those moves. I've been holding back and just playing the social game for so long, but you know, I've got a brain, I'm strategic too. And I can see that happening a lot more. So it does make sense for Paul to keep Alex. And if he gets down to that final five with those competitions, like, there's a really strong chance that he could win out. Like, the fact that nobody's really looking at him right now, a few weeks ago, I was like, oh no, Paul's got only 3 weeks left in this game. Like, well, 3 weeks later and his position's better than it was then. So I don't know.
Alex, I mean, Paul had a lengthy conversation to the cameras about his game. Did you watch that? And like, how are you feeling about his whole game plan right now?
It's leaps and bounds better than anyone else in there. So it's just hard to find fault with anything Paul's doing when like everyone else is crawling, you know, even if he's like, you know, stopping to walk along the race, everyone else is still crawling. So it just doesn't matter what speed he really goes, because no one else is moving. So it's, yeah, I mean, I think, he could make major missteps. I mean, there's that option, and he hasn't so far. And I think he does see that he sees his path pretty clearly. I think there's, you know, there's probably ways he could go about this that are like a little safer for him. And I think he, you know, the fact that he was a recruit last year, I think plays into the fact that he thinks at some point you have to win competitions, which, like, if you set yourself up with enough of these sheep, like, you might not have to win competitions at all. But, you know, I mean, his vision for the end game is, again, still so much better than anyone else's.
Yes. Brendan in the chat from Brendan Rachel, who did a great job on the podcast Sunday night. He's discovered the real reason that Brent has not been able to drive home. He's asking, can we double check to make sure Brent did not look directly into the eclipse? Yeah. He says it's traffic, but we all know that he looked directly into it and now he can't see to drive home. We're sorry to have to reveal that information, Brent. I know you wanted me to keep it a secret.
Yeah, I was just looking at like eclipse pictures on Instagram today, and now I'm like having trouble with my eyes. So.
We're just the blind leading the blind.
Yes, talking about the blind. Paul's strategy here, he's mentioned it on the show now, but also on the feeds, is to bounce around these couples really make them use him as a resource, right? Like, they all see him as their ticket to the end game. He is the person going around between all of the pairs, negotiating all of the treaties. You know, they really just see him as like, oh, well, he's a third wheel that's helping us get far. And with every single pair sees him that way, then obviously he's never going to be in any danger because they're always going to be at each other's throats and not his throat. And the fact that he doesn't have a very clear number one is very, very valuable, because even if you recognize that Paul is running the game, he's only one person. At least he's not two people. Two people is going to always look a little more threatening than just one person, unless Paul is convincing you that Mark is more threatening than Alex, Jason, and Kevin combined. John, you've mentioned that you're fully on board the Paul train now. Are you liking the strat? I mean, we talked about this on Friday, the dictatorship game. Are you enjoying this? I know some people have said that that they look at the game differently now after that podcast.
Yeah, well, I think that sort of for my own personal psyche, I need to get behind Paul, because I've been wanting to see his downfall just for team good feeds for so long, and it's just been so frustrating that I've been tearing my hair out. So, you know, I, in order to sleep at night, now that I'm team Paul, it's great. I'm just watching him steamroll all over these people. And I do think this is a good strategy. I like to call this the Davon Rogers Memorial strategy, because it's the one that she sort of had handed to her on a silver platter, but then turned down and saw her life in the game ending. And there's a reason why we last year were all talking about why it was a good idea. It is a good strategy. And I think that another thing in terms of how good Paul's social game is that none of these players have thought past the final three. You know, you think like the final three, that's basically the end of the game. But like, if you're Christmas and Josh, let's use them for an example. Let's say that Paul is completely loyal to them, because as of right now, he pretty much is. So if you're Christmas and Josh, it's like, okay, well, we know that Paul's loyal to us, we're loyal to him, that gets us to the final three. But like, how delusional do you have to be about yourself that you think that you and, you know, your partner are going to beat Paul in the final three challenge? Like, if Paul wins the final three challenge, that means that one of you, you and your ride or die, aren't going to make it. And you could apply this to Matt and Raven. You can apply this to Jason and Alex. They all think that Paul is their third person. And even if that's completely true, even if he's not lying to any of them, which we know he's lying to some of them, he has to be necessarily, they've all convinced themselves that that's all totally good. They haven't fought beyond the final three. Like, if they want to be in the final two together, that means that one of the two of them has to beat Paul. And Paul hasn't even, like, he's not Dr. Will over here. Like, he has won the most challenges this season. Like, in front of their faces, he has won the most challenges. So they know that he can win challenges, but they've all convinced themselves that that's not a problem.
Small caveat, though. I think Matt and Raven have thought that far. They're just convinced Paul's going to, like, give up the game for Raven for some stupid reason.
Yeah. Well, obviously, why wouldn't he? I mean,
right.
It's
yeah. Big Brother 19
cause.
Is a lifetime achievement Make-A-Wish award. I forgot.
Yeah.
She's America's darling. Okay.
Exactly. That, I mean, this is the first time anyone's hearing Kirsten say anything about Raven. So obviously this is her true opinion.
Not sarcastic at all.
Did you guys see that she caught arthritis the other day?
Yeah.
Like, that was a new development. And Big Brother After Dark even had it on, like, the lower third. It was like, Raven has developed arthritis in the last hour. Like, that's a new thing.
And then Meg tweeted, like, does this mean there's another member for the Grandma Club? It was just amazing.
You know what? Lots of people have gotten a 24-hour case of arthritis, okay? It's totally reasonable.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's. I think it's perfectly reasonable. I thought it was breaking news. It got a full bullet point in my my morning update notes. It was probably the most important thing to be updated of that day. And I mean, we really need to consider the fact that everyone is just going to hand this game to Raven. I mean, that's what everyone was complaining about in the beginning of the season, right? I mean, it's still coming true. It's. I mean, according to Matt, that's still the case. Christmas is going to lay down. Paul is going to lay down. He's going to lay down. I mean, it's an epidemic, John.
They're going to be so shocked when they realize we don't like her. Oh my God.
I kind of want the final two to be Paul and Raven, because I think that both of them think that they're going to win unanimously, because even the jury, obviously they're going to be going right into Sequester. So they're not going to learn sort of what we all think or know about Raven. And so I think that would be a great final two, because the entire jury would be like, well, it has to be unanimous either way. And both Paul and Raven would think that it was going to completely be unanimous for them. It's kind of like the unstoppable object hitting the immovable object. Like, who's going to win there?
And only Paul would be right.
Right. Yeah.
It would be great because Matt would be in the jury and like they'd be about to give their speech and he'd be like whispering in someone's ear like, oh, just wait. Paul's about to just like hand Raven the win and say everyone should vote for Raven. And then Paul would get up and be like, Raven sucks.
Yeah.
Don't give it to Raven. I never got put up on the block. Give it to me. Her disease is fake. You don't even need to give her. She doesn't even need the money. She's a con artist. And Matt's going to be like, what?
Like, storm the stage. Like, did Gastroparesis Awareness Month mean nothing to you?
This is an interesting idea, because we all, as outsiders, we have Google. We can look these things up. But again, the jury actually has no idea. They won't have access to this information. So if Paul comes up there in this, you know, pretend final two, and he says Raven sucks, all of her diseases are made up, how might the jury feel about that? Because they don't actually have any better information. They might think that that's like Paul taking a dive, you know?
I mean, I think most of that house at this point thinks that not that she's made her disease up, but that she's made lots of things up. I think basically nobody but Matt is in on this. However, I could see Matt as the sort of, Shane figure that's very bitter about Paul, because, you know, Paul swore on a bowl of cereal and he broke his word on that bowl of cereal. And that's blasphemy.
I swear on the hearts. I swear on the stars. I swear on the horseshoes, the clovers and the blue moons.
The game is one thing. You just can't take it that far, guys. I mean, taking cereal into it is just not okay. And it would really just be a fault of Paul's that he might, do something as terrible as swearing on a bowl of cereal.
Darren, I never thought you'd set me up with an opportunity to use one of my favorite made-up Simpsons words, such as sacrilegious, but here we are.
Oh, man. Early hashtag contender right there. So anyway, as John was talking about this whole final three situation, it's really the benefit of working with pairs is that these pairs think that they're getting one over on Paul. They're like, oh, Paul's going to take us to the final three. Little does he know that we're a pair and we're going to take each other and not him. Oh, man, what a score we're getting right here. As though Paul isn't going to like break the pairs up so that doesn't happen. Like, I mean, come on. What are you thinking? This is Paul's game. Speaking of swearing on cereal, Paul also mentioned that he's been working on his jury management. He really wants to make sure that he's leaving good goodbye messages, that he's leaving, having these people leave, feeling good about him. He doesn't want to make the same mistake that he did last time. I'm just liking the fact that he's actually admitting that he made a mistake last time. That's a far cry from where he was in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
But I'm still not entirely sure he knows exactly what the mistake was, because I do think he tried to do jury management in season 18. He just didn't do it very effectively. So, Alex, how confident are you in Paul's jury management here?
Pretty confident, because I think luckily for him this season, good jury management is just like, you know, you could ignore someone, and by the standard that's being applied this season, that's good jury management, because you got Alex over here just like being petty over everything. And Christmas injecting herself into arguments that aren't hers. And like, I mean, it's just a who's who of who doesn't want a jury vote right now. So Paul, I mean, really by default, he could just not do anything. And as long as everyone else is going to keep antagonizing people on their way out the door, the vote's going to come down to like, well, Paul wasn't a total dick. And they were. So, all right. Like, that's so easy.
Well, it's crazy. You know, Josh likes to do his sort of one-on-one camera talks. And earlier today, he was talking to the camera and talking about how he is in the best position that he's been all game and that he's been thinking about jury management, which is so interesting to hear from Josh, because this is the same guy that, you know, does the whole circus music thing, the pots and pans. But even this week, you know, like during the double eviction, he was following Mark around just saying bye, bye, bye in his ear. And it's like, that is... He thinks that's jury management. Like, Josh thinks that he's in the best spot right now.
Let's do a quick analysis of Josh, who Josh has on the jury. We've got Cody, who, you know, yeah, loves Josh. Elena, who, yeah, Josh was real great to her on her way out. And now Mark. So he's really in great shape right now.
Yeah, I mean, if we are going to start to count jury votes, I mean, especially when we're thinking about Paul, I think, you know, Cody walked out of that game. Obviously, he doesn't want to vote for Paul, but I think he said multiple times on the feeds that he would vote for Paul if he was in the end. I believe Elena has said similar things. Mark, I believe, will also vote for Paul if he's there. And so it really just comes down to moving from this moment onward, will Paul be able to start cutting his allies and retaining their votes? Because, you know, I joked about, you know, Matt becoming a Shane, but I really think Matt could be very bitter if he perceives Paul as having betrayed Raven and her disease and all of that. He probably feels like that's far beyond the scope of the game. I think he'll be very personally offended about that. And then we can also look at somebody like Alex, who is saying that Paul could never go against his brand. And if he does, she could feel like that is a gross violation of his brand and that she couldn't possibly support it. So does he need to be concerned about some bitterness with these final few house guests, Kirsten?
Honestly, I think these people are acting too illogically to even be bitter at this point. Like, I think they're all bowing to the shrine of Paul. They want Paul to win. And the thing is with him having these three pairs, he can have those people taken out by others, and then he doesn't even have to worry about it. And with him just putting in the absolute bare minimum for jury management while pushing everybody else to be total dicks to people on their way out, it's like he's doing really, really good jury management because everyone else has like negative jury management. So I don't think he has to be too concerned unless he wins an HOH right away where he just really doesn't need to.
Hey, Taryn, I have a question for you. If Paul were to like get coached from South Pacific treatment somehow, who's like the most likely Sophie Clark? Because I feel like Alex, you know, like Alex is, it's conceivable that like she could win with a bitter jury next to Paul, but I feel like she would have to be one of the bitter jurors to really like make a whole shift like that. So is it Christmas?
I actually do think it's Josh. I think that Josh is the only other person in the house that even thinks about jury management.
Sophie Clark, Josh Martinez.
Yeah. And I think that's part of Josh's game plan is to get to the end with Christmas and Paul. And then if he has the opportunity, he'll take Christmas and potentially win. But also if he does get stuck with Paul, I think he does think he has a decent shot. I don't think he can win, but I think if anybody has a chance, it's probably Josh. We know he'd probably get Christmas. He did a somewhat halfway decent job at convincing Mark and Elena and Cody that like, look, it's nothing personal. You know, it was just part of my game. I don't think that's going to work, especially next to Paul. But again, they're not like so much against Josh in the same way that they are against people like Christmas or Alex. So it really could be Josh. And that's kind of crazy to think about. But people have talked about this as well, but like they feel like Josh is potentially the Steve Moses of this season. He could very easily win that final three HOH, cut Paul, and win this game. And it's starting to look like that. It's starting to look like Josh is the second most likely winner of the season. John, do you disagree with that?
I honestly foresee Paul winning and getting like one vote shy of a unanimous vote. Like we could go line by line. Let's say that he ends up with Matt in the final two. Maybe Raven gets upset and she wants to vote for Matt to win. I think everyone else votes for Paul in that situation. Same thing the other way around. Like, you know, all joking in my previous discussions aside, if he's sitting next to Raven at the end, maybe Matt throws a vote at Raven. I don't think anyone else votes that way. And you can do this with every single pair. I think if he's in the end with Jason and Alex is super bitter, that maybe she'll throw a vote to Jason, but then he wins every other vote. And I think that aside from possibly Kevin still, because he's still, after this week, after Mark goes home, he's going to be the sort of the one outlier without another partner. I think that all of those other pairs, at the worst, most bitter scenario, he's only going to miss out on that one vote.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we compare Paul's game to Derek's a lot, and he's doing a very similar thing to Derek, but I believe that Derek's jury management was also inspired by Dan's in season 10, which it was even more obvious in what it was going on, which is that what Dan did was he set up his like various relationships to target each other. He forced them to do the dirty work, it's Memphis especially, and then you know, swept in as the likable, like, oh man, sorry that happened to go down. What you need to do is get the brunt of the bitterness against the other person, and then after everything is settled down, even if they find out that you were behind it all, they're kind of like, oh wow, it's so impressive that you did that. I'm still mad at the bastard that I thought did it to me, though, because that's really how it works. And if Paul is able to do that successfully, then I think we'll definitely see him as the winner. However, if he starts going on, you know, these competition spree and winning HOH and taking Jason out himself, or taking, you know, Alex out himself, I think that's when he starts to run into a little bit of trouble. And I think that he has enough options that he doesn't have to do that. So I think it really would be a big mistake if he chose to. Right, Kristen?
Yeah, absolutely. He has positioned himself so well where he really, really should not be winning these competitions. Even though if you look at it, he probably has more HOHs than everyone, like in anyone in any other season, right? Because every HOH has gone his way pretty much. And that really, that's the thing that could really screw him up, is if he starts winning, or if he gets too control freaky towards the end, people might start getting a little bit upset about that. Even though he's been a control freak the whole time, now we're really getting down to it, and people might not do that the right way.
Yeah. You know, and again, I feel like Josh is probably the most likely candidate. And the reason why I know that Josh is so dangerous to Paul is because when Paul was talking to the cameras, he mentioned Josh multiple times as somebody that he felt he could trust, as somebody that he would potentially take down to the final three, even the final two. So if you're talking about the person who is most likely of anyone in the house, of anyone left in the house, to beat you in the end, and you're talking about taking that person to the end, you know that something has gone a little wrong there. Granted, I think like people like Jason and Mark, and even possibly, probably not, but possibly Kevin might have a better shot, but they're not getting to the end. So I think Josh, as somebody that can get to the end, if he does, is probably best positioned in that way. So, I mean, we talk about it. Is there anything that can stop Paul at this point, Alex?
I think it's going to need to be people comparing notes, right? Like at this point, that's really like all that can happen. And that, you know, there's no indication that that's coming at any point, but it certainly could. I mean, it seems in past seasons, like, you know, average law of averages and everything dictate that, like, with one less person in the house each week, it should be that much more likely that people are talking and that it's hard to hide secrets. I mean, once you get down to the end of the game, it becomes very difficult to hide relationships, to hide allegiances, to fake fights, to do all that kinds of stuff. I mean, we see it every season. So one would think that when the main house targets are gone, once Mark is gone, once Cody's gone, once Elena's gone, that people would start to compare notes. But, you know, I mean, today everyone's just been running to Paul about Kevin's sketchiness, you know? So, I mean, as long as he keeps doing what you and John talked about on Friday, like establishing the old Ho Chi Minh, as long as not Ho Chi Minh, Chairman Mao, my mistake, very, very different people. As long as he keeps doing that, like establishing a new enemy, like you guys talked about on Friday, then he's going to be in good shape because he's going to keep people's eyes elsewhere.
Yeah. Kevin is next up on the list. And then he's even, you know, moving forward into the next round where he's got people talking about Jason and Alex. Like Matt and Raven are talking about Jason and Alex. Jason and Alex are talking about Matt and Raven. So, you know, when you have these isolations where it's like, this is the person that's on the outs, there's no incentive to talk to that person. And, you know, that's the one thing we need is communication, but it's really not happening. We even saw on the show on Sunday, multiple times Paul talking in a room with just one pair and saying, no one expects this. Like, he was talking to Alex and saying, like, no one knows that we're together. No one knows that we have the relationship we have. No one knows it. I'm like, let's not burst this bubble. And then later on in the episode that aired, he did the same thing with Matt and Raven. No one knows this. No one knows this. You know, and so the sort of the onus is on them to break that bubble. But they think that it will hurt their game to break that bubble, even though that may not be reality.
Well, so far it really has been, though, because everyone's running back. And in this game, snitches don't get stitches. Snitches get rewarded by Paul. They get a pat on the head. So everyone's just falling over each other, trying to be the first one to snitch. And in that dynamic, yeah, I mean, you can't really get anything going, because to try to have that conversation with someone could spell the end for you. So it's very scary, right?
Yeah. And it's also looking like people are like, okay, well, Paul has these three pairs, so we need to take out another pair so that he has to go with our pair, not looking at forming another coalition to take him out and actually make things interesting. So that's really bad too.
Yeah, it's very much like, Paul is like the supervillain. And, you know, instead of rising up against the supervillain, everyone's just like, well, I just want to vie to be his number two. Then maybe I'll have a chance to stab him in the back and become the new, master in that Darth relationship.
And they're also bad at monologuing, which is another problem if you want to be a supervillain.
Yeah, Doom T in the chat says snitches get friendship. That is that's the story of this season.
Yeah. So we got asked this question last week, and I said that I would take the field over Paul just because of mathematics, and as did Brent. But I think I'm ready to change my answer now. It's hard to see how Paul loses at this point. I really do think it's more likely Paul wins than anyone else combined. Alex, I mean, I'm pretty sure you said you would take Paul over the field. You still feel that way, right?
I waffled. I started by saying I want to take Paul, but I feel like it's stupid because, like, how could it not be the field? But no, it's Paul. Like, I just go with my first, that's always my mistake, is second guessing myself. I should always go with my initial thought.
John, how do you feel?
I really do think that there is a possibility, because I wasn't doing podcasts with you guys during Big Brother 17, but I really think that at this point during Big Brother 17, people were looking at Vanessa, right? Rob famously was talking about how Steve and Johnny Mac were losers at this point, and that, you know, Vanessa, it was her game to lose. And I really think it's a similar situation where if Paul loses, it will be because he gets to the final three, he loses the final three HOH, and whomever wins it cuts him. I do think that Josh might be that person. I think that if somehow Kevin gets there, he might be that person. It's even possible maybe that Jason might be that person. But it's like, you know, there are so many dominoes in a row. Like, again, he has to get to the final three with the wrong pair or the wrong trio. He has to lose that final three HOH, and then whomever wins it has to be the one to take him out. So I'm going to say if it's Paul versus Field, I'm definitely with Paul. I think the only way he loses at this point is if those things happen and he loses that final three.
Yeah, for me, the difference was during Big Brother 17, I and Brent was also saying this too, but like, we were looking at Steve and saying, like, Steve is the second best player in the house. And like, very clearly, he's always, you know, self-interested. He's always, he's not completely and blindly loyal to Vanessa. He will stab her in the back if given the chance. He threw her under the bus multiple times. He used her multiple times and really put her in some tough spots. Josh, who is like in the best position to be the Steve, is not nearly at that level. So even though it's potentially, it's something that could potentially happen, I don't think it's nearly as likely. And I don't think that Josh would be as deserving a winner, if you want to use that word. Kirsten, how do you feel about it? Paul or the field?
My brain says Paul, but my heart says the field. I still think, give me a week. I'm going to say for this week, I'm going to stick with the field. And if he's in the same position or better next week, fine, I'll roll over and say it's Paul. But I'm going to be a contrarian today.
Give me
one week.
Yes. All right. So so let's talk about this temptation twist pretty briefly, because it's pretty lame, to be honest. We've got a tree or two trees or whatever it is. And they've got some temptations on them. You got to pick an apple. You get like a double veto. Can't play in the next HOH. Bounty on your head. There was the save a friend. And then there's one other one that
cancel
I'm missing.
Cancel two eviction votes, I believe.
Yeah, cancel two eviction votes.
That's like the only one I remembered, and it's the only one you forgot. So
there you go.
You make a good team.
Perfect match. Basically the idea for this twist is that you have to choose to take a temptation, and Paul is telling everyone don't take a temptation. Do we think any of these are even going to get chosen at all, John?
So that we're all on the same page, Mark's the only one who has taken one, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
I believe only one person can take one per week.
I think I've heard talk that Paul may be trying to convince people, like, let's nobody take any more the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So, I don't hate it, because maybe then they won't do stuff like this in the future.
So it depends on when the tree turns red at whatever point during the week, right? I think that whomever goes on the block next week, and maybe after veto, if they lose the veto, you know, I think Kevin is smart enough to know that if he's the next target and he's on the block and he loses veto or he gets backdoored, you know, he might go for one of the apples, you know. But other than that, no, I do think he has enough of a hold. Paul has enough of a hold on the house that if he doesn't want anyone to grab one, that they won't, unless they think it's literally their sort of their last lifeline.
Yeah. What's funny to me is that if you are on the block and the potential target, it's almost the can't play in next HOH is almost the best one you could get, because that, you know, your threat level goes so far down if you can't even win the HOH, they might as well take somebody else out instead that week. And then, you know, you got a whole another week of time to campaign and figure something else out. Maybe something could happen. The person has to sniff out the fact that they're the target. And I don't know if that's going to happen, to be honest. I think we could see a situation where even the target that is going to go home that week doesn't choose a temptation because they think they're safe, which would just be insane to me, Kirsten.
Yeah, they could just think, oh, it's my turn to be on the block. I think this twist came in at least 1 week too late to really have an impact. It's just too late.
We haven't had any like real like blindsides though for a long time. You know what I mean? Like even going far back as Ramsey's, you know, pretty much everyone's known. You know, Cody and Jessica obviously knew they were going. Elena knew that she was going once Mark won the veto. Mark definitely knows he's going this week. I think once you become the enemy, once you become the ouster type person, you know, because of the fact that Paul has such a tight hold on everyone, it's like, well, let's not talk to that person. I mean, I again, maybe it's my heart, like you're saying, Kristen, but like I do think that once you become that enemy, you kind of know you're the enemy.
Well, at least. Oh, go ahead.
I do think there's an important difference this week from previous weeks where you're right. Like Paul has in advance made somebody a target and then like slowly, you know, made it very, very clear so that the person knew that they were going to be going home. Maybe Dominique is like the one exception for that because it kind of happened all at once. But even then, she then found out and then went home. Whereas this coming week, everyone thinks they're in good with Paul and everyone thinks that they're safe. Unless something happens like Matt or Raven or Jason or Alex win the HOH and they're like, oh, well, Matt or Raven is coming or are coming for us, or Alex or Jason are coming for us. I do think that it's going to be a situation where they're not really going to see it coming. And that's, again, it's a little bit of potential for some interesting stuff to happen there. But yeah, I mean, I can honestly see that, you know, maybe nobody takes any of these, and that would be very, that'd be fun for me. I always enjoy watching twists crumble.
You're a monster.
All right. Let's get into the stock watch here. I had some very kind people on Twitter, attempt to, you know, track our movements on this. I gotta say, I didn't really, we couldn't really follow most of it. It's kind of a complicated system. But I do have some ideas for like how to make this work. We might not be able to do it for this season, but maybe for the next one. I like the idea of like putting out a poll, you know, the day before or something with each player in the game and saying like, do you want to buy, hold, or sell? And then get like a taste of the audience perspective and then see how ours matches up with that. Maybe even give like some dollar values, but that might get a little too complicated. But thank you everyone who has been keeping track of that stuff. The main takeaway is that like we're terrible at this, and like nobody is very bought or sold at this point. We're like very up and down. But let's start with Paul here. I think it would be irresponsible to not you know buy as much Paul stock as possible. Alex, how do you feel?
I agree. Can I sell the season though? just as a whole.
I'm liking the season.
Me too.
You would. Paul, yeah, Paul's in great shape. I mean, you know, you're paying a premium, but you're still buying. What else is there to say?
Yeah, I mean, you want as much Paul stock at the end of the season as you can. John, do you agree?
Yeah, I think the only reason you wouldn't want to buy Paul stock is if the price is too high. I don't know what the current, you know, commodity trading value is for one share of Paul's friendship stock. But I mean, I think if you can afford it, even one will pay dividends in the coming weeks.
As Doom Tribe in the chat says, buy Brent some sunglasses for the next eclipse. Yeah. Kirsten, are you buying Paul too?
Yeah, I say let's buy Paul. Let's drive the cost of that stock up even further so that hopefully we can sell and he ends up crashing and burning.
Okay. We just have to be the ones to figure it out first.
What do you want? Stuart, you got some insider information?
Ooh.
Oh, I wish.
All right. Let's talk about Alex next. Alex, last week at this point in time, we were talking about how you might not like what she's doing, but it's pretty successful because she's right. Paul does want to take her to the end. Now we're saying, uh-oh, this is what happens when you give someone too much power. Paul has changed his mind. So it's going to be hard to see anything but a sell here, right, John?
I will say that he's still considering Alex as, you know, a trade out with Kevin for the final five. So if we are, you know, I always do this when we do the stock watch, but if we're comparing from last week, she's definitely at a lower value. So maybe we do want to sell. But I still think that she has a lock for final six, if not final five. I don't necessarily think, you know, unless Matt wins the next HOH, I don't know that she's going to be going next week. So I would still say buy for now. But if we're talking about winning, then maybe not.
Yeah, I wonder if I do a revamp of the stock watch, maybe we should take out the stock aspect of it, because there's really two competing strategies, which is like, where has their game gone from last week? And then also, like, if you're actually a stock trader, what would the optimal strategy be for winning the most amount of money? And I feel like those things conflict a little bit. Kirsten, how do you feel about Alex?
See, I'm not the right person for this. My economics minor is like, okay, we need to make good financial decisions. I'm like, you guys are all alarmists. You need to just be cool. Have the problem with the stock market is everyone's buying it. So like, just be cool. Just hold her. But I won't sit on the fence. I'll say, you know what? I still think we should buy a little bit. Again, give it a week. If it goes down, then we'll sell.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's really just a situation where it's like, I could theoretically see Alex, you know, maybe cutting Paul for Jason. And maybe she can win sitting next to Jason, but it's hard to see her winning sitting next to Paul. If Jason is going out soon, then who else does Alex get to the end with? It's really looking like she's starting to draw dead here. Even though she is one of the better competitors in the house, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I think even if she does get to the end, even though people do respect her on some level, they also hate her because she's so annoying. So it's really, really hard to do anything other than sell here.
I was going to say, even against Jason, like Jason hasn't really offended anyone all season. And now he's got this whole baby announcement thing. Like if he, you know, he might be able to leverage that into a few votes too. So yes. Even against Jason, she might be drawing dead. Sorry, Alex, go.
No. Yeah.
Alex, you're muted.
Oh, no, Alex.
I'm
there. You go.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't have much more to add on that.
All right. Let's move on to Jason. I was saying, I felt like Jason was one of Jason was essentially in the Josh spot last week. You know, he was in a position where he could theoretically turn on Paul if need be. I think he absolutely would have if he got to the end. I think part of the reason why he's in trouble now is because Paul sniffed that out. So Jason has all of a sudden just completely tanked. I mean, he is the target for next week. If Paul has anything to say about it, Jason will be going home. The only thing that he has in his favor is that him and Alex have a decent shot at winning the HOH. But even then, it's hard to see them getting down to the end. And with Paul wanting to target Jason over Alex, it's really, really hard to do anything other than sell Jason for me. Alex, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I just think ultimately, like, you know, the problem from Jason since the beginning is he doesn't understand this game. Like, he's just, even when he starts to, like, get on the right track, I mean, he's just so easily dissuaded from doing what he should be doing. It's always been really hard for me to see how he's going to end up winning. Because I think, like, down the stretch, you need to be able to just kind of, like, see the forest through the trees. And I really just have a hard time seeing how he's going to be able to do that. And we're starting to see that kind of come to fruition and take shape in the form of him, you know, going along with plans that aren't necessarily in his best interest.
Kirsten, you agree?
Yeah, and we've seen him try to make a speech now, so we know that that's not good. I think the Jason bubble was last week, and we need to get out while the getting's good.
Kirsten, I don't know what you're talking about with the speech. We had a conversation where you talked about John, and you said that he was bad at speaking, and I don't understand why you're saying this about Jason right now. It's just, I don't, why?
You know what, I wash my hands of this.
John, how do you feel about Jason?
I just need to check something. Kirsten, you said you're an economics minor. What is the current like Toronto exchange rate of whistles to nuts? Because I need to, my conversions are all off.
No, oh God, you know what? I don't know. I didn't check the exchange this morning.
Oh, my God.
This is the only reason why we had you on the podcast.
Normally over my coffee.
I'll just go. Bye.
Normally I have my cup of coffee and I'm looking it up. No, I think that you're probably going to be selling Jason. I think that next week, if he doesn't, you know, win veto or HOH, that he's probably next on the block, too. So I'll sell.
All right. Let's move on to Kevin, who we were pretty down on last week. It seemed as though his game had already tanked at that point. But it doesn't seem like it's gone anywhere up from this point. Even though we know Paul wants to take him to the final five, it's only as a GOAT, as somebody who can't win competitions. He doesn't even plan on taking him to the final two, and it's hard to see anybody that would. And at this point, nobody seems to respect his game. Alex, I don't know. How are you feeling about Kevin here?
Not great. I'm just worried about... Yeah, I'm worried about his life in the game, because even the people closest to him, Jason and Alex, are running back to Paul like all day today, really, with, you know, Kevin's sketchy this way, Kevin's sketchy this way. Like, the more they talk like this, the more, I mean, he's just going to find himself unable to do any of the things he needs to do to position himself right, because nobody's going to be loyal to him. Eventually, he's going to probably try to make a move, and like, they're just going to, anyone he tries to make it with is just going to run back to Paul. So I worry about Kevin. I do think, like, pretty soon, because he's smart too. That's the other thing. He's smarter than all these idiots in the house. Like, he doesn't know the game, but he's just intelligent. So based on that alone, he is a threat to Paul. And I think Paul is beginning to see that.
Yeah. John, you agree with that?
Yeah. Sadly, I was a big Kevin fan all season. I still am. So it's a bummer to say this, but I would generally agree. I think that Kevin's path to the end, I think that it lies in him being not underestimated anymore, but misestimated. Whereas for most of the season, people thought of him as a nice guy, but he was kind of dumb. He didn't know what he was doing. Now they think of him as like this sketchy guy. They think of him as a GOAT. So I think that maybe if push comes to shove, if there's a situation where he's on the block next to somebody who might be a juicier target, they might misestimate and say, well, we can get Kevin later because he sucks, because he's sketchy. No one would vote for him in the end. And that might help him eke by a little bit farther. And so, and then, you know, who knows, maybe in this sort of this moonshot of an idea, he gets to the end and then he has a really good speech or something. But generally, I'm selling as well.
Well, Kirsten, the Saran wrap seems to be failing here. Are you going to tell me otherwise?
Honestly, if I didn't know someone who reminded me so much of Kevin, I'd be like, yeah, we're selling. But this person I know, my sister's husband, people hear about him in concept and they're like, oh, he sounds awful. I don't want to like him. And they meet him and they are immediately taken by him. And Kevin is exactly like him, just the 20 years older. And so I'm buying him because I know what it's like to talk to someone with that personality. And I just think he still has a chance to maneuver, especially because he is much smarter than these other people.
I will say that I do think that if he somehow does get to the final two, even though nobody's really respecting him right now, he is affable enough that I could see him winning some votes, especially with, you know, with Cody with Cody being the mayor of Jury House. You know, that's something that could theoretically happen. But I will have to sell on Kevin here because I really don't see the path for him to get to the end. And even if he does get there, I think it's not particularly likely that he gets those votes. So let's move on to Josh, who is, as we mentioned, our most likely Steve Moses candidate. But is that enough to start buying him, or are we holding, or are his chances even down? John, what do you think?
First of all, since we're talking about Josh and we just talked about Kevin, I want to bring up something that happened on the live feeds earlier today. Alex and Paul were encouraging Josh to harass Kevin. Like, they, you know, they want to put their pit bull, you know, their meatball or whatever onto Kevin now. And Josh, as of now, doesn't really want to do it, but we might see that later in the week or next week. And specifically, they wanted to harass him about his weight, which seems like such a weird thing to hit Kevin on. Like, it's not like he's any less fit. I mean, he's a little older, but like, he looks pretty good for his age. I don't know. That's just a little bit weird. But no, I'm buying Josh still, because he is our Steve Moses, you know, long shot candidate. And also, no one's targeting him. Kevin wants him in the final three. Kevin possibly wants him in the final two. And, you know, Matt and Raven are looking at Alex and Jason. Alex and Jason are looking at Matt and Raven. Everyone's kind of looking at Kevin right now. No one's looking at Josh at all for any time in the near future. You know, if Christmas somehow wins the final three HOH, I'm pretty sure she would, you know, consider taking Josh over Paul. So I think definitely buy on Josh for sure.
Did you say they're going to put their meatball on him?
No. Yeah.
Inappropriate. Yeah, yeah.
Who is it you like to put your meatball on, Josh?
No. I the other day I was talking about how that Alex and Paul think of Josh as their pit bull. And then I said meat bull, like, you know, like a pit bull, but a meatball, like a meat bull. That's what I was saying. I don't put my meatball on anybody.
I don't know about that. I will say there was basically one like actual interesting point of data in the Stockwatch stuff, which was that like basically the only like line that goes beyond like one or two was that Brent has bought Josh every single week of the game without fail.
He's gonna end up being right.
Brent is like Brent has spent his entire fortune on Josh at this point, so
he's the biggest gambler out of all of us, right? So yeah. Like he probably knows a thing or two.
It's
like some guy that heard about Amazon and had like taken a trip to Brazil, so he just liked the name, like right when it first came out, had no idea what the business was going to be, so he just got in on the ground floor and now he's like a multimillionaire.
Yeah,
for all the wrong reasons.
Alex, how do you feel about Josh?
I guess I don't think I have any shares of Josh. So like for me to say hold, I'm just going to like grab the air. I'm not going to buy now, man. I've been a hater for too long. I can't bring my pride. I can't do it.
I got to say myself, you know, I've got to have someone as my backup, you know, at this point. I'm selling basically everyone else. So I might as well buy a little bit of Josh here. Like I said, I think he's the second highest candidate here, and I don't think anyone else is particularly close. So, you know, it's worth something. Kirsten, what do you think?
Yeah, buy. I think Josh stock is undervalued right now. So we still got a shot. Get in.
All right. Let's talk about Christmas. Nothing has really changed too much for Christmas. She has a different group of people in the final five with her, but she's always been in that final five. She you know, correctly pointed out the other day that she's basically going to make it as pretty far because she's got that injured foot and everyone wants to bring her as far as possible because she can't compete in half the competitions. So it's hard to see that changing anytime soon. However, we've never been super high on her chances to win the game. Kirsten, how do you feel about Christmas?
I sell Christmas. I think the best she can do is be a like zero or one vote finalist. That's my hope for Christmas.
Alex, do you agree with that?
Part of me in the back of my head has this idea that like if everyone were to be bitter against Paul and Christmas is sitting there like Tiny Tim on Christmas, that maybe there's oh yeah, right, too many Christmases. Now I'm confused myself. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't think she has a chance, but I think she has a better chance than Raven if we're going to talk about it, if we're like rank the charity cases here.
Yeah.
So, but I guess that's damning with faint praise.
Yeah. John, what do you think?
Yeah. So here's the difference, I think, between Raven and Christmas. I think everyone's annoyed with Raven and they're getting kind of sick of her shtick. But Christmas has attacked people, right? We've talked about how Christmas likes to chime in when fights are happening and speak up when she doesn't need to. I think that her jury management, yeah, exactly. Her jury management is among the worst of the people that we have left. I think that there's very few people that Christmas could be next to where she would get votes because it's like all other things being equal. If we have two players who haven't done a whole lot and they haven't done too much and Christmas's leg is broken, but blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, Christmas kind of said some mean things to so-and-so. And I think that that's going to lose her a lot of votes. I would agree with Kirsten, zero or one vote finalist.
Yes. You know, looking at the data, I'm already in the negatives for Christmas. I don't know if I have any to sell. But I'll continue to sell on Christmas. I really don't feel like she's got much of a shot here. Again, she can make it to the end theoretically, but I have a hard time seeing her winning votes. And I think a lot of people are going to recognize that, like, yeah, you broke your foot and that's why they took you. Like, there's really not much other reason. They saw you as pathetic, and so they took you along, and you were obnoxious half the game. So, yeah, just hard to see you winning this game. It really is.
You don't have any shares of Christmas, so you're like taking out a mortgage on the idea of shares of Christmas.
I'm shorting Christmas stock right now.
Shorting it.
All right, let's move on to Matt. If we're tracking week to week, you know, last week it looked like Matt was going to be one of the next targets. He still is theoretically one of the upcoming targets, but he's got a little bit of a reprieve here. Alex, what does that do for you in terms of his stock?
I sell it all. Get somebody take it off my hands. It's just so bad, man. He's in there like, I'm going to take my turn as the pawn this week, and it could be someone else's turn. Dude, it's been your turn three times in a row. When's it going to be Paul's turn? Never. That's when. You're so bad. Stop it.
Okay. John, what do you think?
Yeah, he's not playing. He's, you know, we were talking before jury that maybe once jury starts, he'll play. He's a great, you know, butt of a joke with all the cereal stuff, but he doesn't really care. I think that he is sincere when he talks about giving the game over to Raven or to Paul. And we've been entertaining the idea of, well, what if Paul gets to the final three and loses the final three HOH? You know, who would cut him? Who wouldn't cut him? I think Matt would take Paul. If Matt somehow gets to the final three and wins the final three, I think he would take Paul to the final three over anyone other than Raven. So, sell Matt.
Kirsten, how do you feel about him?
Alex, you oversold him so much at the start of the season. My hopes were so high.
I didn't know. I knew people who work with him, and they're like pretty impressive salesmen. So, like, I'm as shocked as anyone, believe me, that this guy is so terrible. No one's more disappointed than me, I promise.
Why didn't they warn you about the cereal? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, they could have, because my buddy Pat and I talked a few weeks ago, and he's not watching or listening to any podcast. He's like, how's my boy Matt doing? He's still just chilling with the cereal. And at the time, it was pre-jury. And I was like, yeah, it's actually working for him. And like a week later, I was like, not working. It's just not working at all.
Anyways, I'm going to hold him, because even though he's fallen so far, he's still so much higher just because of my over expectations. This guy.
I knew he was going to showmance it up. I called that. Definitely called my shot on that one. But that's about it.
Yeah. Again, looking at this data, it looks like 3 weeks ago, we all bought Matt. Every single one of us bought Matt. And then
pre-jury's about to end. This guy keeps saying he's going to play. Like, he's about to turn this around. He's going to backdoor Paul so fast. Like,
and then ever since, we've all, it's just a steep line down. We've all just been selling as much as possible. I would say that again, week to week, he has gone up from last week. He has a better chance at winning this week than he did last week. However, I still have too much bought in Matt, so I need to sell. And you just sell as much as possible.
Yep.
Here's the thing with Matt. I will defend all of us. I'm going to sort of take the burden off of all of our shoulders right now. He, for the first half of the game, is playing the style of game that we all talk about how you should play, right? He went to sleep for the first 30 days.
That's what you're supposed to do. Be nice.
He was nice. He didn't rub anyone the wrong way, right? What does Haley Ford always say?
Bathe regularly. Just basics. The basics.
Don't be weird. Don't be inconsiderate. You'll do okay.
Do your laundry. Maybe if you only have two shirts, it's easier to just turn around, you know?
Absolutely. Don't interrupt people.
And we also, because he was laying so low, he didn't get a lot of DRs, right? We see when we watch the aired show, we see the DRs, and that's when people say like what their actual strategies are. And because he wasn't doing a whole lot, we didn't see a lot of that. So I will defend myself. If I could go back in time with the information that I had now, then I still would be high on Matt early on. I think he did nothing wrong. The problem is that he never woke up. He never started playing. And now, because there are fewer people in the house, we are actually seeing his DRs, and he is saying the same stuff in the DR where he's like, yes, I'm so excited to be a pawn this week. And that's where it's like, no, you know what I mean? I think that we all made a good prediction early on. And for the first few weeks when we were high on him, I think that based on the information we had, that it was all smart. It's just that, you know, now we know that it's a dud. He's a lemon.
Yeah, he was supposed to wake up, but it turns out he's been in a coma this whole time.
Yeah,
well, it's the cereal.
It's all the carbs, man. Too many carbs.
I will say this, and again, like this, I mean, this is like a very minor point. I do not expect, I am selling Matt. I do not think he has any chance here. However, I do think there's a tiny, tiny percent chance that once Raven is gone, And then also, hopefully, you know, he stops eating cereal because he's too heartbroken about Raven. Because he needs both of those influences out of this game. But once Raven is gone, I could see him start to turn it up. I think he really is playing for Raven right now. But if Raven is gone, he might start to get a little more self-interested, which might turn into something. The problem is, even if he does get self-interested, he's bad at competitions and he has no social leverage. So it's not like it's going to do anything for him, but he could start actually playing at some point, at which point we're going to be like, oh, wow, we wish we had seen this Matt all along. But again, his chances of winning are just like so low at this point. I mean, his true goal was to eat a record-breaking amount of cereal before he goes home.
So I wasn't watching today when they went outside for like the eclipse, but I have to imagine that he did one of those like, I'll make my cereal box into glasses, because who else but Matt?
What I'm sure he did was like, who needs to watch an eclipse when I've got a sun right here in my cereal?
Was it Golden Grahams?
I don't know. I don't eat like shaped cereal. I have like bran flakes and Cheerios. Yeah.
Well, Lucky Charms does have blue moons, as I recall.
There you go. All right. So let's move on to Raven. We've probably all just been so, oh my God. I'm looking at the Raven data. It's just steep lines down.
What about on Jokers? I think she's been in 17th, like, you know, behind Cameron and everyone else who we never got a chance to know. She's been in 17th for like 30 days without wavering. Now, the top 10 is all evicted house guests, except I think Mark is ninth. I don't know if I've ever seen Jokers like that. Like,
I feel like
insane.
That's every season for Jokers, to be honest.
It's usually similar, but like there's always one or two who seem like they're going against the house who like stay up there. And now those people are just like all gone. Like I don't know that I've ever seen everyone at the top who's evicted and everyone still in the house at the bottom. Complete. Like,
I feel like the main reason why they keep the evicted house guests in the poll is so that they can be at the top and we can cathartic. Be like, oh, what an unlikable cast that the evicted people are so much ahead. That doesn't actually say much about the unlikability of the cast. It says that they were so likable that even when they were evicted, people still loved them.
Or it says a lot about the psychology of the fan base. Anyways.
Yeah, that's really the case. Is anyone, just raise your hand, is anyone going to buy or hold on Raven, or is everyone selling here?
Girl, buy.
I'm selling on Raven, but I am going to buy stock in metoclopramide, because apparently that's the only FDA-approved medication for gastroparesis, according to my Google searches. So that might be something worth buying.
Maybe. I'm selling the fact that Raven's mom holds the record for like the fastest mile in the state, whatever that was. I'm also selling the idea that Raven was like this close to making the Olympics in gymnastics. I'm selling that. You can't be an Olympic athlete and then also be like on death's door. It can't be both things. It just can't.
I'm buying the idea that someone put Raven's disease on the Wikipedia page for hypochondria today.
I saw that. Yeah.
Raven's disease.
I like that. That's nice. That's kind of poetical.
What's funny is that if she got out of the house and saw that, she'd be like, yes, exactly. I have that. Hypochondria.
It is amazing. It's an adult person who like, and I can't remember what cartoon it was. I almost want to say it was like Rugrats or something. I remember some cartoon when I was like a little kid where like one kid's just following another kid around. And like the first kid just, oh, I remember. It was SpongeBob. We're like, Patrick's trying to win an award because SpongeBob wins all these awards and Patrick doesn't win anything. So he starts just emulating everything SpongeBob does. And SpongeBob hurts himself. And Patrick's like, oh, me too. That's Raven. She sees you injure yourself and she's
That's
like, I did it
so
too.
So Raven. It's
Yeah, but she was also talking about how she'll like need surgery on her knee because she banged up her knee. So, like, she says this to Christmas, who's just like, are you kidding? I did misspeak earlier when I said the only point of data on this thing was that Brent has bought Josh every time. We've basically sold Raven almost every single week. They are very steep lines down. So let's finally move on to Mark, who, again, I feel like we're all selling Mark, right? Like, he's got no hope of even staying this week.
Yep.
Yeah. Well.
Yes, you know.
Before we close, Taryn, before you end this podcast, I'd like to like for the last like 30 seconds or so play the theme, the sad theme from The Incredible Hulk, where he's just walking away. Can we do that? Well, can we go out on that?
We do have questions still, but we can finish out the, because there's nothing to talk about with Mark. He's going home. We're going to sell his stock. Let's play it, whatever it is.
What, now?
Yeah,
let's do it now.
Unless you want to save it for the end.
Poor Mark.
Gotta look off to the side a little bit there.
He came. He sulked.
Yeah, that's his secret. He's always sulking.
Yeah. He will never be forgotten. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Before we move on to the questions, I have a couple hypothetical stock watches that I would like to share because I think these are all worth discussing.
Do they tell time?
No.
Hypothetically?
No.
That was so bad.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to ask you, are you buying or selling on these ideas? Okay. And then we'll go around, right?
All right.
First one, are you buying or selling on any of these final nine returning to play again?
I could see Josh. So I would say yes. I'd buy that.
I think at that point, I'm not going to be on stock watch, but suicide watch. I hope not.
Yeah, I buy on that. I could see them bringing back Christmas to be like, she hurt herself and now she can show and she can play when she's better.
So. I mean, they have to be extremely disappointed with Christmas's injury. I mean, like, this is probably one of the most physically fit people they've ever had on the show. And she turns out to be one of the most physically incapable people in the history of the show.
Right, yeah. Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah.
Yeah, of all the people to injure themselves, it had to be her.
Yeah, you may have saved the horse riding the cowboy, but you did not save yourself.
Yes, people are saying Jessica, but Jessica was not in the final nine.
Right. Well, so. Yeah. There's been
Cody
a lot of
and Jesse,
talk.
Based on that Friday episode, if that's any indication, right?
Yeah. Which is why I specified that anyone that's still in the game, anyone in this final nine, because I do think Cody and Jessica probably are the most likely of the newbies this season to come back. So I actually am going to hedge my bets on them and say selling. I don't think any of these other final nine are going to return. If we see anyone from this season, I think it will be Jessica and or Cody. All right. Let's just do
a returnee season with like all failed showmances. We could probably fill a cast at this point, can't we?
Yeah, you could do like a sequel to. You could do a sequel to Big Brother 4.
Austin and Liz, James and Natalie,
McCray
and Amanda.
You could do Big Brother 4.
Amanda.
Why do you hate us?
You don't think they're going to be like cutting each other left and right? Like, you don't think it's going to be like James would be mortified if Natalie made it further than him or whatever? Like, that would be.
I think
that would
be a good season. I'm a big
fan
of Big Brother
4. Like, I'd be down. I'm in.
Could we like put Allison from Big Brother 4 in by herself? Just like.
Just as an X factor. Yeah. Yeah. You better watch your exes closely because Allison's coming in.
All right. What's the next proposition you've got for us?
I know that Brent has a horse in this race, which is why I'm bringing this up because he's not here. But buying or selling anyone other than Paul winning America's Favorite Player this season?
Buying because he's in the final two.
Yeah. I think it's going to be Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, not only is Paul probably the winner and or in the final two, which wouldn't mean he would be ineligible. I do think that Kevin probably has the best shot. I think Jason has a small shot. And as much as Brent is trying to push the Jess thing, I'm not sure I see that happening. You know, it's still a long way until the end, and people tend to forget when they're not seeing the person on their screen.
It's tough. But she made it further than Howard, who finished top three in the voting of that very controversial season. So it's
top
not,
three, but he didn't
not
win.
Not impossible. Yeah, yeah, no, it's.
Wait, so if you're in the final two, you're ineligible to win America's Favorite Player?
I believe that's an unofficial. I don't know if we've ever like seen.
Okay, because I've never heard that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has ever been in the top two and won or even been in the top three for the America's Favorite Player. If I were to campaign for anyone like Brent is doing, I would say Cameron. Let's vote for Cameron, America's Favorite Player. Stick it to those producers. Tell them we don't want to see these things happen anymore.
I just found the rundown of who the history of America's Favorite Player.
Okay.
I didn't know it went all the way back to All-Stars. Did you guys?
Didn't Chicken George win All-Stars for Favorite Player?
Janelle.
Yeah, it must
Have been Janelle. That makes more sense.
Janelle. Will was the runner-up. They didn't have one for 8. Crazy James in 9. Keisha in 10. Big Jeff in 11. Brittany in 12. Big Jeff once more in 13. Frank in 14, Alyssa in 15, Donnie in 16, James, and then Victor last year.
I can't believe they didn't have one in eight. Eric was literally America's player. They couldn't throw him a bone.
Nope. It's literally the reason they didn't do that award was because of the America's player twist. Like, that's the note here.
Yeah, because like, Evil Dick already won because so they didn't need any more. All right.
Did you think America was voting for Eric? Like, they screwed him all season.
Oh, yeah.
Season.
He wouldn't
There's
have
no
won America.
He would have won.
Never. No. They made him, like, ice out his own showmate.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was made even less likable because of America forcing him to do things. Okay. Any more propositions you got for us, John?
Yeah, okay, this one. We had an eclipse today. That was a big deal. Obviously, that was all over the news and all over television. The next eclipse that will happen in the United States will be in the year 2024. Are you buying or selling Big Brother still being on the air in 2024? That is 7 years from now. That'll put us at Big Brother 23.
I would,
right? 26. Big Brother 26.
He's a psychologist, not a mathematician.
Yeah.
I would buy that. I think 7 years isn't too big of a stretch. I think the biggest trouble for Big Brother moving forward is that I don't know how invested Julie is in Big Brother. She had an interview somewhat recently where she was like, yeah, sometimes I kind of hope that the show doesn't do well because then I don't have to keep doing it. It was kind of a joke, but it was also like, why even make that joke? I think that's the biggest obstacle. But I mean, the fact that it's so cheap to produce, it still does well. We're still getting like very good ratings this season. I'm very high on Big Brother's life forecast here.
What about Kirsten?
Yeah, well, and there was an article recently where Julie Chen said she doesn't see any reason why the show would go anywhere. And so if she's still on board, they're not canceling it. Look who she's married to, right? So
right.
I'm buying on that.
Yeah, and they just brought in like a new executive showrunner who loves Big Brother. Like that was one of the first things he said when he came on board. It's like, I'm a big fan of the Big Brother and the Survivor and stuff. So I think it's, yeah. They're not, there's no reason to, I mean, again, like it's cheap original summer programming up against reruns. So it's always going to crush. It's always going to do well. And it's not even going to need to be good to do it. So
I agree
why
with
you guys. Just keep it running.
I think that even though 7 years is a long time and we're talking about, I did the math now, Big Brother 26, because of the price, because of the fact that Julie still seems like she likes it and like everything you guys said, I do think that we might be talking about it next time there's an eclipse. And that was the last of my hypotheticals. Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be gearing up for OTT8 as well.
Yep, of course.
and Brent will miss that podcast as well.
Yep.
I'll look at that sun again. He never learns his lesson.
I just stayed inside. I didn't trust myself not to just glance up there and just die immediately. Just be rendered to cinder.
All right. Let's get into some of these questions. We have one from Jennifer on Twitter who asks, is Paul making a mistake by cutting Alex and taking Josh instead? It seems as though Alex is the only house guest willing to take Paul to the final two. She had another question that was somewhat similar of like, if he turns his back on Alex, is that going to turn her against him? Like, is this a bad move to be so openly against Alex? Obviously, he should try to hide it, but like she is blindly loyal and he did consider taking her to the final five. Is that what he should do, Kirsten?
Yeah, like as we've said previously, like Josh is the other option really to win right now. So it's a big mistake to get rid of Alex and keep him trusting Josh so much is probably like the one chink in Paul's armor right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky situation. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it all comes back to the fact that nobody is comparing notes. So, I mean, you know, it's hard to see anything backfiring on Paul when everyone's so risk averse and so afraid to even bring him up in a conversation that doesn't involve talking about how he's the greatest. I mean, it's hard to see. I do think, you know, what he's doing isn't necessarily like, you know, based on her loyalty. Yeah, he should just keep her around forever. But it's, you know, he's been playing at a very high pace. He's been micromanaging very, very intently all season. So, I mean, it's just hard for me to think that this is going to be the thing that derails him. I don't see it. She's just so not aware of the possibility.
It does seem to me like the one scenario where he definitely makes it to the end is if he gets to the final three with Alex and Christmas. If he's able to maintain Alex's loyalty, then you know, he basically goes to that crapshoot with Alex because Christmas can't compete in those first two parts. And if Alex is definitely taking him, then he basically wins the season because he probably beats Alex even if she takes him.
Final four with them and Raven is just
exactly
just so beautiful. Yeah, it's the stuff dreams are made of.
And that's why I do think that his idea about taking Alex to the final five, if he's able to do it, is probably his best bet. Of course, he needs to be able to carefully take Jason out without pissing her off. And that'll be the tricky part. If he does end up pissing her off, he has a great alternative plan, which is taking Kevin instead. But I do think that having Alex in that final five is a little bit of extra security. And I think that that is the better shot for him. We have a question from Adam who asks, if Paul wins this season, is he one of the greatest winners of all time? And where should you put him on your, or where would you put him on your winner rankings? Alex, I'll start with you. What do you think?
I mean, he's not in like the elite tier for me. He's high. I don't know that it's hard to compare adversity, you know, from one season to the next. We haven't seen Elena play against Amanda Zuckerman. You know, like, we don't know exactly that the people that he was able to fleece are any dumber than the people Andy or somebody else, you know, so it's very hard to do all that. But all I have to base it on really is kind of my own perception, watching feeds and watching stuff and kind of seeing what other people were trying to come up with that they were able to thwart and stuff. So, I mean, for me, he's certainly not in the Dan, Derek, Will tier. I'd still have Andy ahead of him. I think I'd still have Hayden ahead of him. I think at that point, he probably enters the conversation. I mean, we're talking about all winners, I think, at that point, that were either flawed or played as like the beta of a pair, like Boogie did, you know, or like found a way to win that, you know, they clearly leveraged something that wasn't just complete control the whole time. So I don't know. I mean, for me, he did have like that level of control, but it's just looking at the nature of the cast and the way they played it, I think it's a slight knock for me. I probably put slot him under Hayden if this all continues to go so smoothly.
Do you have a number for that?
Like seven, six.
All right,
seven.
John, what do you think?
I'm in a similar place. Here's the two things. Here's what if I'm thinking about where do I measure them? Okay. On the one hand, he had 3 weeks of safety coming into the game. He had a number of powers and advantages that either played directly into his favor or indirectly into his favor. I think that brings him down a little bit. I think that brings him away from, you know, like we're saying, the Dan, Will, Derek tier.
Mount Rushmore.
But I don't think he's on Mount Rushmore. But if he makes it to the final two and wins, he will only be the second player ever to make it to the final two, right? Dan Giesling's the only other one. And it was twice in a row that he made it to the final two. And, you know, Big Brother Canada is a slightly different thing, but we had a similar thing with Netta where she had safety at the beginning and then she got cut right away. So I do think that by being the only other player to make it to the final two twice, to do it twice in a row, and the fact that once he lost safety, he still never got nominated a single time, I think that puts him very, very high up there. I would put him similarly with Hayden or even a little bit higher and say that he's kind of with Andy there.
Yeah, you're right. I wasn't really factoring in the second place last year. You're right. He should be above Hayden. Just, you know, based on body of work, I think you're right.
Kirsten, how do you feel?
John said it all. Cosign.
Okay.
Still taking Andy, though. I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
So in terms of my analysis of Paul's game, I think when you look at the advantages, there was never an instance where we can definitively say Paul would have gone home almost certainly if not for this advantage, right? Like, he certainly was saved from being put up on the block, but evidence points to the fact that he probably would have stayed there just like Christmas did. And granted, that gives us a level of uncertainty, like we don't know for sure what would have happened, but we can say that was the more likely outcome, as opposed to some other advantages where it's like, you know, for example, Rachel would have gone home if not for the Pandora's box. We know that almost certainly. We can look at that and say that he probably is not going home there. There's no other instance where he would have been in danger. It adds a level of uncertainty, but it doesn't like totally detract from his game in the way that other adventures would. However, we do know that him being a returning player is an advantage that has definitively and very evidently given him a lot of power over the other house guests. He's talked about actively using that as a strategy. And if he wasn't a returning player and if he wasn't the sole vet in the house, his game would be entirely different. We know that for a fact. We don't know what his game would look like at all if not for that. And that's a huge factor that we have to consider. Not to mention the fact that many of these other winners did it on their first try. And most people don't get two tries. So if you're looking at like who's going to win in 100 games, like most people aren't going to have a second try in those 100 games. So that's something you have to consider as well. With all that in mind, I have him above Mike Boogie because Boogie also won in his second try, but Paul is obviously doing it in a much more dominating fashion. When you talk about his level of competition, again, as we sort of talked about with John, it's not necessarily that these are like the dumbest players in the world. A lot of people could fall under this spell with these same circumstances. So it's hard to say that this is like the one of the worst casts of all time when this is the kind of response you would expect from this style of gameplay. We saw it with Derek. We saw it even with Dan at some points. I'm not a huge fan of the level of gameplay in the cast argument. But the sole vet thing is something that is going to drastically lower where I'd put him. If this was his first try and he wasn't the sole vet, I'd have him in the top three, no question. But without that, I have to put him below other people who did it on their first try, like Derek, like Andy, like Hayden, even Maggie. I'd have him around the June level. I don't know, maybe he's slightly above June, maybe he's slightly below June, but that would put him at around seven or eight for me. So, very dominating game, but the sole vet thing is the fact that it's the second try and he's the sole vet, it's really gonna, it's really detrimental to how you look at his game ultimately.
Yeah, you really can't understate the soul vet thing, right? I mean, him exactly. Being a returning player is huge, but, you know, John brought up the Netta thing and how, look at who, you know, turned it on Netta. It was other vets. It was Cindy's HOH. It was Ika's move. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, if she had been in there as the only vet, we can't know with certainty that Netta wouldn't have been able to, you know, protect all that. So, yeah, right. I mean, that really is, I think, something that you
Karen wouldn't have allowed it.
And we've seen other people like Jesse play very well when he's the sole vet. And we've seen it happen in Survivor as well. When there's one or two vets in a season of new players, they almost always reach the end of the game. They don't always win, but they almost always reach the end of the game. So it's really a huge factor. Having that knowledge and that that experience is just such a huge thing. And again, as we talked about on Friday with the psychology stuff, it grants you a level of authority that you otherwise would not have or would have to work very hard to achieve. So it's really a huge advantage. It can be a disadvantage, and I don't want people to forget about that either. It can put a target on your back, and that's what Paul is saying all the time. Like, oh, I came in as a sole vet. It's such a disadvantage. I can't believe I was never put on the block. It can put a target on your back unfairly. But it's the sort of thing where it's like it ups the level of difficulty in your play. But if you're able to rise to that occasion, it's a huge advantage. And then it becomes much easier for you. So that's where I see Paul. And that's the answer to that question. If we ever do another winner rankings, I'm sure we'll discuss this in even more detail. But let's move on. We have a question from Gregory McBean who asks, is Paul's best strategy at this point to not win any more HOHs until the very end, to avoid having to show allegiance to one pair over another? We talked a little bit about this, but can we make this clear? Should Paul be being Dr. Will Kirby here and just throwing everything? Kirsten, what do you think?
Yeah, he absolutely should, but he needs to do it in a way less obvious way than he has been.
Yes. I agree. I mean, I think the idea that like he's obviously throwing a competition to Christmas was just like, you don't need to let people know that you could have won that. Like, but the main thing he has to avoid is being in power, right, John?
Yeah, I think this is similar to the question earlier about like whether he should side with Alex or Josh. I think that we're all on the Titanic and we have little ice scrapers and we're scraping ice off the windows here. We're quibbling with the details. I really think that at this point it's Paul's game to lose. I think that if he won HOH, all of his allies would be so excited, which is everyone in the house. And then he would turn on somebody. And I think that we've seen it happen where he would get the entire house against that person. And then they would be ostracized. And it would be like, we don't even want to talk to that person anymore. You know, if he won HOH and then decided to target Alex, Alex might be upset, but no one would be talking to Alex. Maybe Jason would be a little bit hurt because it's like this final two thing. But who cares what Jason thinks? I really think that he has enough of a way with words and enough power over this house that he could win HOH and people would be overjoyed that he won.
Yeah, but Taryn, I know you don't like doing the comparative, you know, field level difficulty thing, but I think it is kind of interesting to note that, you know, and granted, like everyone reacts differently, and that's why this game is so hard, and that's why there's no like 100% of the time correct moves. Like there's a correct move based on the set of people you're playing with and that kind of thing. But like, I immediately thought about Big Brother Canada 1, where, you know, very similar HOH and a double eviction. Alec Beal like very overtly throws it to Andrew Moynihan and loses his trust in doing so. Like, that's the thing that undoes Alex's game. Like, Andrew's like, wait, and then he feels like he was had because he, like, you know, Alec pulled a fast one and he didn't get an HOH room. And then it like, so, I mean, you know, very easily something this small can undo a gamer's game. We're just not going to be seeing it, I don't think, this season.
Right. But I think that brings up why I'm not a fan of the cast comparison thing, because you can say that's because the cast was a much smarter in Big Brother Canada 1 than it is now. But also,
it's illogical on Andrew's part, though. So,
but,
yeah.
Right. Like, but you also have to consider the fact that, like, people had already been not trusting of Alec at that point. Like, they were already on to Alec and Peter, and they were not, like, they were primed to have that response. And if somebody other than Paul did that, I bet that the players in this house would be like, whoa, that was sketchy. Why did that person do that? It's the fact that it's Paul and he's built the relationships that he has that he was able to succeed in doing that. Yeah. So I don't think that we can just automatically say that it's the cast level. Obviously, I think there are some people where we can look at them and say definitively, like, these are just dumb people. Like, Matt and Raven, I think, are just really bad players. And we can say that, like, them being in the house was great for Paul. But I don't think we can say that about the entire cast as a whole. I think that Paul has done a lot of good work to win them over. But again, he had a lot of advantages in terms of being that sole vet to get those players on his side. That's where I think we should be critiquing his game, not in trying to guess the play level of the cast, because I think that's much more difficult to do.
You know, Nikki in the chat brought up a scenario where if he won HOH, he could put up, like, if he won next, he could put up Kevin and Jason and then tell everyone in the house that Kevin was the target, and then Jason could get voted out and Paul could just say he didn't control the votes, and he could use that as a scenario where he puts more mistrust into the other pairs. So, I mean, I think that's a really good example of something he could do where he could win the HOH and use that as an advantage to bring more trust to him and put more distrust between the other players.
Yeah, for sure. This is probably going to be the most controversial question, and I want to preface this, no spoilers whatsoever, but I do want to try this one out from Tom Palmer. Which Game of Thrones character would each of the remaining house guests be? John, let's start with you. How do we feel? Do you have any ideas? Anything come to mind right away?
I think that Raven is probably like Patchface. Mark is definitely like the Mountain, in a hypothetical Clegane Bowl scenario. Gosh.
Well, he's the Mountain now because he doesn't have much to say for himself.
Yeah. I think Jason is probably Daenerys just because he's so good at riding bulls. And I think that that's probably comparable to dragons.
There we
Paul's
go.
Jon Snow, because he's back and he can do no wrong.
I thought that Jon.
And he
Jon
keeps wearing that fur. Oh, he wore that fur for like half the season. After
that's
that
a good
one.
Point.
He goes to that one comp.
Who's Alex? Is Alex what's her name? The smart talking child lord of the North. What's her name?
Arya.
She's not Arya.
No.
Like,
Lyanna
Mormont.
Definitely
she's
not
that cool.
Lyanna's like, Lyanna Mormont, like she opens her mouth and people listen because she doesn't talk that often. So when she does, it's important. Alex talks so often, like nobody's even Jason is like, Alex was like, I hurt myself today. He was like, too much talking. Like nobody even like has any respect for her, what she has to say now. No, Alex is like,
I think Alex sees herself as Lyanna Mormont. I'll clarify. I think that's how she sees herself.
Okay.
I actually think you can make a case that Alex could be Arya, because Arya started off as someone cool that you think you can root for, and then as time goes on, you're like, what is going on? And I think you can make a strong case that Raven is Daenerys because she's all me, 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 me.
I think Alex is Theon because she's just like totally broken in terms of her own ability to win.
All right. Sorry to the non-Game of Thrones watchers. Hope that wasn't too long, but that was a little bit of fun. All right. So that's the podcast for today. The LFC half LFC roundtable podcast. Do we have any ideas for the hashtag? What was your Simpsons reference there, Alex?
Oh, sacrilicious.
Sacrilicious.
We were talking about making promises on cereal.
I thought of friend snitches.
Friend snitches. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Snitches get friendship or whatever. It's good too.
Yeah, I think Doom Trev is right. I think Mark is reek. Okay. So. do we have any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I like friend snitch because I can spell that for the hashtag.
Play that song again. <Da-na-na>.
Let me know in the chat which one you like, sacrilicious or friend snitches. They kind of rhyme. make sure you check out the Taran Show. I'll be dropping that episode very late tonight, early tomorrow morning. I talked with Eric Stein, who was just talking with us on the recap of the recap. Lots of interesting conversation. He actually talked a lot about Big Brother 8, speaking of. I mean, really, like the frustration that it brought him. He said it really haunts him to this day. So he talks a lot about that, as well as what he's been up to and all kinds of other really, really interesting stuff. He is full of just like great stories. So you just listen for the stories. It's great. So
they should really take that $25K for America's Favorite and just put it into therapy for everyone for like a good, you know, a couple years after they get out of the house. It's so unfair. Like, yeah, you want some money, but, you know, you're going to spend it all recovering from this nightmarish experience you just went.
Yeah. So make sure you check that out. We will be live tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern to update you on everything that happened on the feeds today. And then, of course, we'll be live after the veto episode on Wednesday night to talk about everything that happens there. Of course, make sure you check out But First, a Big Brother 2 blockumentary. If you're interested in going back and watching Dr. Will or listening to people talk about Dr. Will do his thing. He actually tweeted about But First the other day. And as far as I'm aware, he hasn't even deleted the tweet yet, which is the real win here.
Yep, that's right.
So make sure you check that out. I mean, he said he was flattered. So, you know, it's high praise from somebody who hasn't listened to it. all right. So, man, the chat has not been helpful here. I'm seeing two people voted for sacrilicious and one voted for friend snitches. So. Let's go sacrilegious. I like sacrilegious. I like that one.
Yeah, the original context is there's like a waffle stuck to the ceiling and Homer starts like praying to it. I know I shouldn't eat thee, but Homer, that's not God. That's a waffle that got stuck.
Oh, man, we made it through a round table without Alex making a weird animal like reference.
I just had a dog on my lap for half the show.
That's true. All right. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at Armstrong Taran. Alex is at Alex Kidwell. John is at John Krause. And Kirsten, can you tell me your Twitter handle?
I am at Kirsten Said What.
Said what?
Kirsten Said What. She's funny on Twitter, too. You should make sure you check her out. Great job, Kirsten. I thought you did great, especially for not having any preparation whatsoever.
Yeah, we gave you all 2 minutes for this.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. So for Kirsten, John, and Alex, I am Taran Armstrong. Hashtag sacrilicious. We will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye.
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 Bye.